Hello and welcome back to another great episode of the Tuesday Afternoon Radio Show. What your host, Randall Martin. We're so glad you can join us this afternoon. You know, I try to bring as many great guests on from all over the area, from Greene and Columbia County, near and far. And this week is no exception because we're actually going to talk to Meredith Cooey, who is actually from this very radio station. And she's going to tell us what's happening at our very own beloved WGXC. How you doing, Meredith?
I'm doing all right. I'm calling in from the Catskill B studio in our new Catskill studio.
Now, for those who don't know that Meredith is as she said, she's at the B studio, which is right there on Main Street. There is a couple of studios in there. And this is a relatively new development for WGXC because we actually have studios that people can actually see us doing our recordings, people coming in. We have a Main Street presence in Catskill. How's it going and how do you feel about the new digs?
It is great. It feels really good here. It's nice to have, that front window studio and have some street presence. You know, people walk by, see the signs, see people in there and get interested in the station. And today is actually kind of a busy day in the studio. Mm-hmm. We have a 4 p.m. show in the window, a 5 p.m. show in the back studio where I'm at right now, a 7 p.m. show in the back studio, and an 8 p.m. show. So this studio is popping today.
Well, you know, radio is kind of interesting. You know, I've been in both the television and the radio industry, but the interesting thing about radio is that you can kind of be relaxed. You're kind of behind the scenes, behind your microphone doing your thing. And you can be physically relaxed because people don't see you. But in this case, it's a little bit different, right? Where people could actually see you and see you recording. So does it make you more self-conscious as you're doing the show and people are passing by and people are people. Some people are, smiling and looking, goofing around. There's all sorts of interactions and possibly distractions. How do you manage it?
I think different shows approach it differently. And so some people use the front studio because they want that sort of interaction, right? But people don't have to have that sort of interaction and can use the studio in the back where it's a more traditional studio. It's not on display. So, some people really like to engage listeners, right, or potential listeners, people, right, on the street. So it really depends on the person.
I don't know how I'd feel about that. I mean, I've always do the show from my own studio here over in Hudson, and usually without an audience per se. I don't know. I think that I'm a very visual guy, and I think that I think I'd be distracted. I think that my mind would be all over the all over the map, because you're looking and you're reacting to what you see. But it's a great looking, great feeling studio, and it's so great that it's right there in the public, so they can see all the hard work that goes into it. Now, there's a lot of programmers. I've met a couple of people, and, we talk about my show. They've heard my show, and some say, oh, I had a show or I have a show on WGXC. Let's talk about the variety of programming that we bring people, all year long.
Yeah, so I work closely with about 100 volunteer programmers. Mm-hmm. So bringing the listeners a variety of types of shows, right? We have experimental music, radio and transmission art, community talk, like your show and all of the afternoon shows, Pastor Kim, Tom and Sela, Kimberly Irwin's Race Talks show, is another great example of bringing community issues to the airwaves. And then Tepper BT, makes a food segment. So that's all about these adventures going throughout the Hudson Valley, eating at restaurants. And Tepper is now starting to do a full hour food show, accepting call-ins and people asking questions about cooking, which I think will be super fun for the station. You know, we have Theo Baker's Infinite Contact show, which is like some deep cuts and all sorts of music. Neva Wortel's Music for the Masses, which, you know, music from all over the world, Africa and Latin America. Nuestra Musica with Mariano Vera, which is, you know, all Latin American music. Latinx, and yeah, there's such a variety. And right now, this station's programming is 75% original WGXC programming, and so which I think is incredible. And we just had a application period for new programmers. And so I'm in the process of interviewing all those people and setting up audition shows for them. So we'll be welcoming a bunch of new programmers in 2025 at the beginning of the year to increase that percentage even more.
No, and as you say, I mean, that our number of programmers really leads to quite an eclectic and diverse and intriguing lineup of programming, and that's, you can see the community input, which I really think makes us such a special and unique station. Like, you know, it's not a commercial station. People come on and they talk about, you know, what interests them, what, you know, what and engage with subjects that they know about, and so it really gives us a whole picture of the community, and you really can get that you know, on the dial, actually. You know, I mean, there is a public radio, which is great, and gives great reporting. But even then, there's still, I think, more of a filter. I think people can be really, truly authentic and real without concern or fear of. You know, I obviously, you know, we do shows, we get, you know, positive and negative feedback, but you can really be, I think, truly authentic and engaging. And that's what I think, that's one of the things I love about this station. In your radio career, how do you, and in the radio business, how rare and unique are stations where you can have so much public input into what the programming looks like and sounds like?
Yeah, I mean, I think one of the things that makes community radio really special too is that you don't have to have years of broadcast experience to be on air, right? This is not an NPR station where everyone has a specific NPR, you know, or just broadcast media voice, right? So one of the special things that GXC does and that we really believe in is this hands-on radio so that, you know, community members who are interested and committed to making radio, we provide people with what they need to do that. They don't have to have prior knowledge about how to run a board or how to, you know, really conduct interviews or put together a show. It's the willingness to learn and the enthusiasm for what community radio does that is important to us. And I think that openness to experimentation and play and, you know, figuring things out together is also pretty special to, you know, community radio in general, and then WGXC and its specific history of experimentation with the airwaves.
And we talked about that, and personally, and then in some of the workshops that the radio station has given, Let's talk about the experimental side of the radio station. Let's talk about the radio arts, because you do everything from dramatization to bringing sounds, very unique and intriguing sounds from, you know, from all over the environment. How does that play into the mix of programming and what people can do sort of acoustically and sonically on the radio that intrigues and brings in viewers?
Yeah, so WGXC, as being a part of Wavefarm, you know, this larger organization that is committed to transmission art and all forms of experimentation with radio art and the electromagnetic spectrum, you know, part of WGXC's programming is dedicated to that. So that means hosting and broadcasting works on the station that may sound maybe like static. because, right, so radio artists are playing with and experimenting with, you know, what radio is. So it's not always about filling the airwaves with content, let's say, for some of those artists. It's like, what is the sound of radio itself, let's say? You know, so that's where you'll sometimes, you know, tuning into the station, you know, because I'm monitoring the FM signal, you know, all the time. And it's like, is this a problem or is this radio art right now, you know? And so it's like learning how to listen for the subtleties and the differences between, you know, what is an intentional created work, right? And then what is just the signal of radio itself. And sometimes those are one and the same, it seems. And so, you know, we have the artists in residency program. So those artists are invited to make work. And this past year, those artists also did live performances on some Saturdays throughout our open season. So, you know, they were making live radio, oftentimes using some experimental tools. Like Sally Ann McIntyre was using these devices that track birds. Right. Because those are using radio signals. Right. So the artists that we invite to be artists in residence or radio art fellows are oftentimes also interested in radio waves that are not just FM. So it's your very low frequency. It's your, you know, microwave. It's the whole spectrum.
It's sort of like you think about abstract art or modern art, but not on a canvas or actually where the canvas is actually sound. And
sure,
you know, that's how I look at it. And I feel like it's the kind of station that you don't know what you're going to hear when you tune in many times, and you got to give it a minute. You got to give it a minute to get the context of what it is. So you might hear like an interesting collection of sound, or it might be static, or it might be, you know, some other noise. I mean, it runs the gambit. I've had this station on when I get out the car and I come back on and I'm driving. And I'm like, what is that noise in my car? What is going on? And you know, and it's not my car. There's nothing wrong with my vehicle. It's just something that is happening on the radio that you need to kind of hear and decipher. But it is intriguing, and it makes you in all aspects. It's radio that makes you think. Like, give it a moment so you can get the context of what's going on. And usually, it's pretty cool when you find out what it actually is. And it may take a minute. It may take a minute for the description or the next piece or how it's presented to come in. But you'll get some information that'll give you the scope of what you're listening to, A lot of times it's pretty amazing. They're microphones, whether it's capturing galactic sounds, you know, sounds underwater, sounds of nature. It is this vast array of sound from people that are really artists, but in sort of the sonic landscape.
Yeah, that was a really great way of describing that, for sure. And one of the things too that we're committed to and believe in is that sort of experimentation with the airwaves is not just relegated to artists, right?
Yeah, okay.
So other people can do this too. Like this upcoming year, from February through November, we're hosting this series of workshops called All Things Audio. And our tech director, Jen Cutler, is going to be teaching this monthly workshop. And it's about all of these things, like how to record, how to edit, taking recording out into the field, you know, not just in the studio. And so that's open to the community and not just for artists. You know, so anybody that's interested in sound and listening and whatever, you know, that's something that we're trying to provide the general community with too, is the skills, or, you know, just laying out what the possibilities are, right? And that's one of the things that Jen talks a lot about when training new programmers in the studio, is like showing what's possible in the studio,
mm-hmm.
right? And then people can decide what it is that they want to do. It's like, these are all the options that are available to you. Like, what do you want? What do you want to do?
Right.
What kind of radio do you want to make?
Well, you know, what's occurring to me as we're discussing this is that, you know, it's often said, you know, we don't spend enough time really listening,
mm-hmm.
in general. And early on, before all this technology, listening and understanding and interpreting sounds was vital to survival. Like, you had to identify, you know, is this sound a good sound, a welcoming sound? Is this sound of danger? Is this sound, you know, like, you really had to understand the sort of sonic landscape that you were in, because it really could mean life or death, you know, and in mm-hmm. primitive man. And now we spend so much time on technology and not really experiencing and understanding what sound is, how it impacts you, and what it may mean, and even identifying sound. And so it's just an interesting observation. To be able to sort of not use your eyes, because you need to use your eyes for radio, but certainly be listening when you're driving. You should be using your eyes, but you need to listen. Take a break from those other senses. You know, and really kind of, what is this? What does this mean? What does this sound like? What is it, you know, what does it remind me of? There's just so many paths that you could go down when you're listening, primarily. And again, I have an engineering background, mainly, you know, in television. And I spend a lot of time on what's the visual, what does it look like? What's the, you know, what is the intent of the scene? You know, what am I trying to convey? But in radio, we forget that there's all sorts of textual things that we listen to that inform us about the world around us. So it's definitely an interesting approach and an interesting way to sort of experience the world when you're primarily listening and kind of really sort of muting some of your other senses. But let's move on to how...
Well, can I say,
yeah,
can
go,
I say
go, go
something
ahead.
Just about that listening?
Yeah,
I think... you know, listening is so important. And I have these conversations a lot with, you know, other people on staff and other programmers and just, you know, folks at the Catskill Listening Club and things. And, you know, one of our, you know, our slogans for the station is, you know, radio for open ears.
Right.
And the thing about the ear that's different from the eye is that the ear doesn't have a lid. Mm. You know, you don't have an ear lid. So the ears are open and they're, you know, listening is such an embodied experience, right? So the waves are entering into, you know, the ear canal and physically vibrating mm-hmm. parts of your body, right? And, you know, transmission and electromagnetic waves are interacting with the body. Light itself, you know, is part of the electromagnetic spectrum, which is the same as radio, mm-hmm. right? Which is in your eyes. That's how we interpret the visual world. And so sonic waves are vibrating, you know, like the material of our bodies. And I think that for a lot of people that make sound work or audio work or radio art, there's this, you know, interest in those waves. So the sonic waves and the electromagnetic waves and how they interact with the body. So listening is like a fully embodied experience. It impacts us on that level. You know, we can close our eyes to the world, you know, and there's, you know, the way that vision, at least for some people, you know, vision can, the argument is that it separates us from the world a bit, mm. right? But hearing and listening really can connect us, you know, and for artists and for folks, you know, that are hard of hearing or deaf, you know, work, sonic work can be interpreted through vibration. Still, you know, which I think is very special to the audio and sonic arts.
I think you're absolutely right. And, you know, I think a good example is you can show someone a picture of the ocean or a video of the ocean, no sound. And you'll think intellectually you will recognize what it is. If you play sounds from underwater or from the sea, you will, like, say, you will vibrate and you will actually feel it. Mm-hmm. It won't be like you more than just intellectually recognizing what the image is, it'll take you back. You feel it, if you give it a moment, it'll actually take you back to your connected experiences to the ocean or water or being underwater, which is in many ways a more profound reaction than just viewing it.
Yeah. And I mean, I think, you know, for me, that is absolutely true. And I know that that's not always true for all people.
True. But, I mean, for me, it is.
Like what you're describing is absolutely true for someone like me, who is deeply impacted by listening and sound. And I know that that can be true for a lot of audio artists and musicians and radio artists as well. Yeah.
Well, now you just opened a door of inquiry. What brings you, let's talk about Merida for a moment. What brings you to the world of radio and this station?
So I helped start this gallery / like sound art, uh-huh. radio art / radio broadcast platform in Chicago called Radius. Mm. And episodes of that are still airing on the station, which is cool, the archive. And so I was doing that starting back in like 2011, and mm-hmm. I did that until about 2016. And so every month we broadcast work on a low power transmitter that was built by this art collective in Chicago called Temporary Services.
And okay. I like the name.
Yeah, so we were broadcasting artists' works every month, and then we started rebroadcasting those works on GXC back, I think, starting in like 2012, I want to say. And so then I was a resident artist in 2016 at Wave Farm. Uh-huh. And I did a research trip in 2015 to the library there also. And I was living in, I moved to Atlanta in 2011 to start a PhD program. And my dissertation is on experimental radio installation art. Mm-hmm. And so that has, and I was making radio-based work, mainly like performance and dance work using radio. And so then finished up my degree, and now I am here. I am here. Started as, you know, consulting with the station in 2023, and then here I am now.
But what drew you to radio as an art form?
So I really think about the electromagnetic spectrum and that phenomenon. It is one of the four fundamental, you know, electromagnetism is one of the four fundamental forces of the universe. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. And to me, working in a medium that is somehow involved in that feels very existential. And I had worked in performance for, you know, my background in art making is in performance. And then when I was introduced to radio, like through this project, through Radius, you know, I was like, huh, like what would that look like if I started to experiment with these waves in relationship to my body, right? Mm. And so for me, it's this way of like connecting my individual self to something that's bigger than me. Like it's almost a very spiritual practice for me to work in radio.
I was going to ask you, is it art or science or somewhere in between for you?
So I definitely am not a scientist, though I am very interested in the physics of it. Uh-huh. But I can't, like, you know, I'm not an engineer. But I'm very interested in the philosophy, you know, mm-hmm. like the history of science as it relates to radio and how radio, you know, radio waves and the electromagnetic spectrum, you know, had been called ether, you know, and it was, you know, people were trying to find the ether winds, right? And the concept of ether is like, you know, like a very old spiritual concept as mm-hmm. well, right? And so for me, there's something really interesting in the way that different practices and traditions and cultures have this, you know, concept of ether or breath or spirit or whatever, and how it sometimes very directly can relate to the philosophy of science. And to me, electromagnetism is like a very rich place for those kinds of discussions to happen and experimentation to happen.
Well, I totally agree, and I feel like I'm a sound voyager, and as a drummer, I'm always sonically tinkering with things and mm-hmm. working with different sort of combinations of sound and the way to project it, you know, what amount of force produces what sound, you know, and what combinations are elicit what emotions. And you try to bring that together in a rhythmic pattern and produce that. So I kind of consider myself, you know, like, you know, a sound explorer, a sound voyager, because you're always trying to find new ways to produce something and have people experience something sonically.
Yes.
So it's.
Yeah. And I think like in our day and age, I mean, listening, I think like what you're saying, like even from, you know, like thousands of years past, right? Like listening was a way that we, you know, really knew, could figure out what was coming.
Right.
You know, and listening today, I think, is so important too, listening to each other. And what does it mean to deeply listen to another person? And I think, like, at least I like to think that what we provide GXC listeners, right, of like these exercises and deep listening and like an opportunity to really like listen in a nuanced way, like carves out some sort of space for listening to each other more deeply.
You know, I like that because, you know, when you practice really listening, it really is a skill that you build. And I think that a lot of times we end up talking at each other instead of with each other, and people totally don't really gather the information, because usually it's when people are talking that you're thinking of what you want to say, but you're not really bringing in what they're saying. And in a way, you know, listening to WGXC is really, it's helping to build a skill, I think, for people, again, to listen to each other. And like you said, deep listening is another thing than just superficial listening. And it is something that the world is lacking in general.
Yeah, and sometimes, you know, on the station, like one of the things is like, love it or hate it, you know, like we're doing something right, because, you know, it's like appealing to different types of listeners,
right,
like throughout the day, right? So it's like, what would it look like to really listen to something on air that you're like, I really don't know about this, you know, but like giving it a shot, giving it a try, you know, and like translating that into, you know, listening to someone that you may not agree with, right? And but just like, how do I listen to this? Like, how do I find something of value or connection here, right? So like really translating that way of listening to everyday life.
I agree. And I like that. I do that. Like I will intentionally sometimes listen to things that I don't agree with, just to hear what is that perspective and try to glean something out of what I'm hearing, and turn off my judgment for a minute as much as I can, you know, to hear what it is. But you're right, you know, GXC is not like silo listening. Like if I like jazz, I only listen to the jazz station. I like rock, I only listen to rock station. There is something greater than the sum of what we would normally listen to be gained by listening to WGXC, because you're going to hear many, many different things, some of which you understand and agree with, some of which you don't, some of which you're learning, but it isn't. By active listening, you can really gain a more expansive perspective, because it's not your normal media silo of, you know, kind of spoon feeding you what they think you're going to like.
Yeah. And I mean, and all of that, you know, is all because of these wonderful volunteers that we have, right?
Yes.
Who are so dedicated to their shows and so passionate about what they are bringing to the listener, you know, like people spending, like everyone just spending so much time preparing, like, okay, like this is what I want to play this week, or like this is the thing that I'm going to do right now, and just like so excited to give that to the community. So it's like when you turn the dial to WGXC, it's like the person that's there like really wants to like be giving you this experience. And it's not just some sort of run-of-the-mill sort of thing. And I feel like, you know, there's this desire for connecting to the listener and really gifting something, which I think is really special in community radio, especially.
And hey, on that note, we're going to take a quick station ID. You're listening to WGXC 90.7, listener-supported radio, and we're speaking with Meredith Cooey, Programming Manager and Volunteer Coordinator for WGXC. And I am Randall Martin, your Tuesday afternoon radio host, and we'll be right back after this quick tune. Don't go anywhere. Thank you.
I listen to the wind of my soul. Where I'll end up, well, I think only God really knows. I've sat upon the setting sun, but never, 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 I never wanted water once. No, never, never, never. I listen to my words, but they fall far below. I let my music take me where my heart wants to go.
And you're listening to WGXC, listener-supported radio. A little pause for the cause and break. But let me ask you this. It doesn't just happen organically. I mean, people have to volunteer. It has to be organized. There is expenses. Tell our audience a little bit about what makes listener-supported radio really function and sort of the listener's role in that equation.
Sure. Yeah. So since we are non-commercial, we're a non-commercial commercial educational station, we do not rely on ad sales. And so a lot of our support comes from listeners to, you know, keep the lights on, keep the rent for the transmitter paid, the rent for the Catskill studio, to get our equipment, to source, you know, remote kits and new gear for folks. Yeah.
What do we want people to do as a result of kind of experiencing the station, and what are the best ways for people to support what we do?
I think that there are lots of ways to support. There, you know, are one-time donations, there's monthly support and sustaining supporters, there is, you know, underwriting on the station or becoming a business supporter. And then, like, those are all, you know, financially, you know, financial ways to support. But then there's things like telling your friends and family and neighbors about the station if you listen to it, calling into the station, you know, when shows are doing call-ins, you know, like last Friday during the Sugar Shack jukebox with Jared, you know, he had Rockin' Ray Palmer in doing a holiday special. And, you know, it was great to get, you know, to hear like all these community members calling in and requesting songs, putting a GXC bumper sticker on your car. You know, we have merch, we have stickers, we have the station to listen to, we have our Instagram account. You know, there are all these different ways to get connected to the station and to support the station without, you know, like if financial giving is not accessible at the moment, then, you know, there's other ways to support.
And it is true. I mean, you know, as you say, there's so many ways that you can support the station. And, you know, unlike, I think, a lot of big stations, when we talk about any donation, is really appreciated and impactful. Because we're not commercial, that is literally true. Like, if you know, if you can give even a little bit helps, I guess is where I'm headed with this, because, you know, there's the raw cost of electricity. I mean, transmitters use an enormous amount of energy to produce those waves and that we're talking about. And it's just expensive, you know, to do what we do. And so it is vital that people support this community resource, because it is a resource like no other. And so, and especially in a time where, you know, sort of radio freedom is important. When you want to be able to have voices from your community to speak their truth and to tell you, you know, their perspectives, it's really important, I think, in the next coming years, to really have that option out there, to have a place on the dial where you can hear the voices from people from your community react and respond to what's going on. with a sort of an unvarnished, unfiltered perspective, because, you know, the truth and our individual perspectives is important, and the ability to listen to each other in these sort of open formats is important. And that's my opinion.
Absolutely. Love that.
So what's next? What's coming up for the radio station in 2025? And over the holidays and 2025, I should say.
Yeah. So a lot of things. I mentioned that we just are going through a new round, another round of program applicants. And so we're doing interviews right now with so many people. And then we're going to be setting up audition shows for those folks starting in January. So all those auditions will be posted on the website. They'll be happening throughout the month, probably also into February. So, you know, if folks have feedback, they can call us. They can email us about any of these shows. We invite the community to listen to what's coming up. So we'll have that. We are now integrating the music that local musicians sent through our Local Waves open call.
Nice.
Which was really exciting, working with Mike Amari of Chosen Family, and then we'll be continuing that work with the WGXC Music Committee. And then we have this All Things Audio workshop series starting in February. I think registration is closed for that since we had so much interest in it, which is very exciting. So hopefully we'll be able to set up another workshop series. And yeah, we're just working on continuing to improve operations and help the programmers that we have do, you know, the shows to the best that they want and be here for the community. You know, really re-engaging the community calendar for people to submit their events to. And yeah, lots of stuff.
Very, very nice. What is your wishes for 2025?
My wish for 2025 is 100% WGXC original programming.
All right. All right. We can do it. It's a challenge. I think we can do it.
Yeah. And more sustaining support.
Okay. Excellent. 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 Well, it's always a pleasure talking to you. Anything else that you want to tell our listeners before we go into a little musical tune?
You know, we have lots of exciting, smart, creative folks doing shows on the air who really care about what they do and, you know, community support. If folks like what they hear, you know, they can reach out and I can pass those well wishes to, you know, the programmer. Our programmers really want to hear from the people that are listening so that they know that someone's out there listening, because it's really important to them. And yeah, I want our programmers to feel supported and to feel heard. So if you got something to say, send it along.
Yeah, we have that whole talk back line, that whole where people can leave comments and questions. And if people have suggestions, like if people want to see, we know what I would like as a programmer. If people want to hear certain topics, they want to hear somebody discuss a particular thing, I'd like to, those are things I'd like to hear. Because, you know, when you live in your, everybody has their own bubble and their own special interests, and you talk about that. But certainly, if there's a desire to hear more about a particular topic from particular guests or hosts, that for me would be interesting to explore, you know.
Yeah. Yeah, so folks can email feedback at wgxc.org or call in at 518-622-2598, and I believe it's extension 4. to leave a message, and we pass those along to the programmers it's meant for.
Now, are we going to do sort of a lockbox, you know, that technique that other stations have used so that it cuts down our fundraising time, which interrupts some of our programming? Does that make sense for us? I mean, people can give at any time, but it's often mm-hmm. like when there's a specific call to action or whatever that people remember, you know. Is there going to be something like that where people can be, you know, do that so we don't have to have such a focus on fundraising throughout the year?
Well, I think, you know, part of the goal in past years is if we reach a certain level of monthly support uh-huh. that we can do away with, you know, pledge drives. Like the traditional form of pledge drive.
Right.
So, you know, our 14th anniversary is coming up in February. So okay. we're going to have some exciting things planned for that. So we will see. We'll see about it.
Well, I think that'd be interesting. And as you're doing gifts or thinking about things in the new year, you know, gift WGXC a little bit so that we can limit our fundraising effort and give our maximum amount of attention, full-time attention, to just doing great programming. So that's my wish for 2020, my radio wish, I should say. Well, anyway, it's always a pleasure talking to you. Thank you for coming on and kind of giving us a peek behind under the hood of WGXC and what we
Absolutely.
Do and why
Thank
we do
you.
It. You're very, very welcome. And we're going to take a tune, and you're listening to WGXC, the Tuesday afternoon radio show with your host. And I was speaking with Meredith Cooley, and we'll be right back on the Tuesday afternoon radio show. Hello and welcome to another Tuesday afternoon radio show with your host, Randall Martin. So glad you can join us. And one of the things that I love about our area is the multitude of creative people doing great work and really looking at the perspective of our area and sharing it with the world. And today we have another such person who's an author. And he's written a children's book about Warren Street here in Hudson. Maria, how are you?
I am fine, Randall. Thanks for having me. I'm really happy to be here.
Hey, it is my pleasure. All right, I was fascinated when we spoke and you had mentioned that you had written a book on the area, and not just about Warren Street, but also about the church, you know, and a church that's near and dear to, well, probably, I think, almost everyone in Hudson, the First Presbyterian Church. How did that come about?
Well, I'm a member of First Presbyterian Church, uh-huh. and it's on 369 Warren Street. And I had the assistance and encouragement of a small group of congregation members. And we all sat down together and we just started thinking about why we come to church.
Uh-huh. I like that. I like that. And before we get into more details about the book, tell me a little about yourself and your journey to writing this project.
Okay. Well, I am an author. I've been a high school teacher for about 30 years, and now I'm mostly retired. And I've written books about art. And I started with a photographer. So I wrote a book about a photographer, and it's being used by a professor to make a PBS documentary. So I'm really happy about that.
Wow. Very impressive.
And I've been a co-author with a friend who was 12 years old when she met Georgia O'Keeffe in Hawaii. And so we wrote a book about that, and that was transformed into an exhibit at the New York Botanical Gardens. So sometimes books have a strange way of, you know, changing things, and in a very good way. I'm attracted to art and historic buildings, especially because I like seeing things from the past. I think that's a good way to learn about, you know, what came before us. And I just love beautiful things, and our church is really gorgeous.
Now, based on your other two books and the success of them, you must write in a very descriptive way, because you know it's hard to adapt a book to other mediums unless sort of the meat is on the bones of really describing and bringing people into that world. How did you format that style so that people can look at your work and then imagine, you know, and be able to build the whole world around it and imagine what it would be as a documentary or as it would be in other forms of literary art?
Well, I love research, and I just read and read and read. For that book about the photographer, there were 23 reels of microfilm, and I just spent days and days in the library. When I was studying art history, I just took my time, and I felt I really got to know the person because she was a good writer, and I just read everything that she wrote. And I looked at all her pictures. All her photographs are at the Library of Congress. So I just spent days and days just looking through her pictures and trying to remember everything, and I took lots of notes, and it was just lovely. She became a friend, even though, you know, she wasn't alive anymore, but just because she left so much behind, I was able to get to know her.
Well, no, that's a wonderful technique for writers out there to really understand that, you know, when you come at a subject matter that you want to explore, you know, having that wealth and that researcher skills that you have really provides that whole foundation, like a very rich foundation in which to draw from. And I think most people don't think about it in that way. You just think about, oh, I like a topic, and then I do it. But they don't see all the work that comes before it in building that knowledge base in order to paint that picture.
Oh, yeah. And you really got to be selective, because not everybody leaves a lot behind. But when you can find an artist that really knows how to write and how to draw, how to take pictures or paint, and they leave a lot behind, then you have a treasure chest to work from.
Now there is a whole, I feel, a whole new movement toward people writing children's books, not just like, let's say, children's books authors, but, you know, every week, you know, there's someone else that comes out with a children's book. Why has that that format, that, you know, that genre become so popular, you think?
Well, I think everybody loves to talk to kids. I know I do. I have two grandchildren, and I love seeing things through their eyes. And I feel like that's part of my role now. And you know, as we get older, we want to pass down what we know to the next generation.
That sounds perfect. And it makes perfect sense. Because I see it all the time and I'm wondering, why has this movement started? But you're absolutely right. As you know, that is how I feel. I'm a relatively new grandfather. And, you know, I feel now that impetus to pass on my knowledge and thoughts and, you know, onto, you know, my kids and my grandkids, you know, for a legacy sake. So that's a very interesting and great thing to do. When you approach this project, you did it in a very unusual way. I mean, it wasn't a sort of a very straightforward way. It was a way to sort of explain this book through a different set of eyes. Do you want to elaborate how you approached it?
Well, I didn't want to do it all by myself because I'm just one of many. Mm-hmm. And I wanted to make sure I was representing the church in the right way. So I wanted to be sure to include other members of the congregation to see how they feel. So that I'm not just doing something weird, you know. I wanted to make sure that they approved. And it's also, when you hear how other people think, I think your story becomes a lot richer, mm-hmm. you know, when you get other people thinking about the same sort of things. And and like when we were talking about why we go to church, we came up with a whole bunch of different ideas, like, you know, for a sense of community, mm-hmm. for mm-hmm. spiritual knowledge, for moral guidance. And then some people were just saying, you know, for positive thinking and for making friends mm-hmm. and for, let's see what else, for creativity. God is the creator and he wants us to create as well. And another person said, there's a light in all of us and the church brings out that light. Mm-hmm. And I just thought that these are all ideas that I wouldn't have all thought about myself, but isn't it wonderful that I could be with a group that could share their ideas like that.
Collaboration is very important. And yes. It's also tricky when, you know, in the artistic world, because, you know, you kind of have a vision in what you want to do, but, you know, when you collaborate, like you say, it opens doors and pathways of thought that you wouldn't necessarily have taken. And it could add this wonderful insight to your project that wouldn't have existed had you not reached out and talked to others. But also the perspective. When you told me offline about the perspective that you use to showcase this book, because it's a children's book, so it's not really theological, you know, in nature.
Right.
So tell me about like your main character and how you chose to work through that perspective.
Okay. Well, I have a copy of the book here, so you can see the main character. I don't know if you can see it here. But this is Marty the Mouse.
Yes.
And he's our tour guide. He lives in the church and he welcomes us all inside his home and shows us why it's so wonderful. So I just think it's fun to have a host. And I just picked this mouse.
I thought that was great when you said that. I thought that was just a wonderful, very imaginative way to approach it, especially for a kid. That it was just a great way to sort of tour and introduce it. And it added this sort of another level of sort of almost a magical feel, you know, of the mouse kind of taking you and showing you all the different sort of areas of the church. Did you have fun? Was it an enjoyable process?
Oh, it was, because my husband is a photographer. And I really needed him to take pictures for the illustrator who lives in Missouri, of all places.
Okay.
Yeah, so that was the hard part, was communicating with the illustrator. because she's never seen the church except through my husband's photographs. Mm-hmm. But we went through the church and we took pictures of the stained glass windows, the ornate woodwork of the pews, the tall spire from the outside that you can see when you're on Warren Street. Then he took a close-up of the clock and the weather vane at the top, which I had never really noticed before, and the Tiffany mosaic in the front and the rose window. One night, the lights were on and you could see the rose window. So he took a really nice picture of it at night. So that was a lot of fun, just because I got to see some things for the first time. Because, you know, when you're in church, you don't always look for all those things, right?
Right.
So it was fun to go in and just look at all these different parts of the church.
Well, you know, that church is remarkably well kept. You know, there's a lot of churches, and because of the age and, you know, various congregations of, you know, they're transitory. You got people that are involved in the thing for, you know, a few years and then not. And so you don't necessarily have a great amount of consistency, and especially like in the maintenance area, because most people are volunteering. But that church, both inside and out, seems to be in pretty great shape.
It is in good shape, but I'll tell you, it needs a lot of work. You know, like all old things, you know, like I right now live in an old building that was built around the same time, and there's always something to do to fix it up, you know? And I think that your point is well taken. We do have a good group of volunteers, and we all, it's a group effort, right? I mean, nobody could take care of it by themselves. And we have a good organization that helps us out. They're called the Friends, and I'm not real involved with them, but I know they help out too. So, and the town owns the clock, and so they take care of the clock.
I did not know that. The town owns the clock.
Yeah.
You know, it's funny because it's sort of my nighttime alarm clock to remind me to go to bed. If I'm outside, I'm on the couch, and I hear it, and I say, oh, it's 2 o'clock. I got to get to bed. And it's nice that probably almost 80% of Hudson hears that.
Same time. When we were taking pictures of the rose window, a lady walked by, and she says, I really love that clock. She lives right nearby. And it was just really neat that she knew that we were taking pictures of the church, and she just stopped to tell us that.
You know, and it's just town-wise, sonically, it's so much better and reassuring than our Amtrak, which I also hear at various times beeping, which is not really a great sound or pleasant.
No, it's not.
It's more interruptive, but the clock just seems like you just grow to hear that as a part of your day.
And you it's reassuring, it. Yeah.
Exactly. Mm-hmm. So when you have the inspiration of looking at it and approaching this project in this way, was this different in going in this genre for a children's book? Was it different than the other type of writing and the process and the companies that you had to use and engage?
Yeah, it was a real learning experience for me because I had my own idea of what Marty should look like. Mm-hmm. And guess what? Not everybody had the same ideas. You know, I think I learned that when you work with an illustrator, you really got to know, and I don't know, you got to give them artistic license. Uh-huh. So the artist's name is Jeannie Conway. She wrote, she drew the pictures, and I just let her, you know, transform my ideas into her work, you know? So Marty looks a little different than I imagined, but
really?
I thought,
well, so she turned out a little different than what you had in your mind's eye.
Yeah. I thought he was going to be a little smaller, a little more petite. And I thought he was going to wear a kimono most of the time, but he doesn't always do that.
Okay. So there's lots of surprises in the book. Who was the first to read? Did you have like your granddaughter? Like who, once you kind of had it together, who did you sort of go to sort of not proof it, but to sort of give you feedback from that youth perspective?
Well, I went back to my original group. I tried it out, and everybody seemed to like the idea. I got a lot of encouragement. And so, you know, because I didn't want to just do it without asking other people what they thought.
Right,
you know?
Right, right.
And I have to admit, when I was a kid, I used to write stories for my brothers. And, you know, so, I mean, I have done children's books before, but this was going to be big time. You know, I was going to publish this. So I had to really be careful and make sure that people would like it. You know?
Right, right. And so where does the journey go now? Now that it's written, it's out, it's illustrated, it looks good. People like it. Now what do you do?
Okay. Well, we've got a big stack of them, and they're available at the church, and they're $10 a piece, and every penny goes to the church. And I can give you a phone number and an email address if people want to, you know, contact the church, or just go inside and talk to the administrator there. But do you want me to give you a phone number or a?
Well, yeah, no, well, you know, we'll get to that in just a few minutes, because it's such a wonderful fundraiser, and I didn't realize that aspect of it when you did it.
Yeah, it all goes to the church.
A gift, you know, because obviously it took a lot of time and a lot of energy and a lot of expertise, you know, to do this. And so it's such a wonderful gift to the community, but specifically to the church, who, as I mentioned, even though the building is well taken care of, that is no easy feat. And as everything is these days, probably very expensive, you know.
Yeah,
to anytime
that's
you have to
true.
Do anything,
everybody, you know, that can help, we're just very thankful for anybody who can help out. And you know, the other aspect of this is to just encourage people to join us, because I want people to understand that the doors are open for everybody, mm-hmm. you know, mm-hmm. For young or old, you know, the more the merrier. And we are a church that really wants to reach out to people and know that we're here for them, you know. So that's another reason I wrote the book, too. You know, we need help, of course, for the church's upkeep, but we also want to be a community that can be helpful.
Well, it's such an open church, and, you know, open door church. And, you know, it kind of got on my radar with your former pastor, Catherine Belke.
Oh, yes. Yes, she was wonderful.
She was such
a
welcoming person. And then I got involved and did a few things, like, you know, in the church, or whether I was taping something or we played music at the church a couple of times. But the camaraderie and the friendship and the sort of environment, I want to say vibe, but it's not, I don't usually use that word in reference to a church, but it's got a great feeling, and the people
are
very open.
It really
and
does.
Very nice. It's a lovely place.
The people are so creative, and they want to do a lot of things that are new, and you know, it's great for music. It's great for talks. It's great for plays, you know, concerts. And we do have a new minister.
I was going to mention that.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. Because you mentioned Reverend Belke. She was wonderful. But we do have a new minister, Reverend Jason White. He just started out. So, you know.
I've seen him for the first time. He gave remarks. Reverend Singletary was there a couple of weeks ago. And he gave remarks, and I had an opportunity to hear him. She's like a very, very nice, knowledgeable, another great addition, you know, to the church. And he's a young guy.
Yeah, he's very young. He just had a baby. I think it was a boy. Anyway, he had his first child just recently. He and his wife.
Well, it's always great when you can bring, you know, as you mentioned, even with your collaboration, a new perspective to the church. And, you know, every church needs to be able to reach that next generation. So having a young pastor come will help in that whole process and help to get young people also engaged in the continuing the great legacy of that church.
Yes, I think young people really are needed. You know, I have to admit, we need more young people. You know, that's another reason to write the children's book, mm-hmm. to let them know that we want kids.
Yeah, and it's, You know, it's a wonderful place because it's very open, and there's a lot of visual aesthetics to look at. You know, it's a great place for kids. Because when you're young, when I went to church when you're young, you're listening and you can kind of hear it, but you kind of get sort of the spirit and the word of God by osmosis. Because you're a kid, you're not really focused on that. You're just looking around. it's a great visual place, and the message is certainly there, and having an uplifting environment and a spirit-filled church is certainly a wonderful addition. We had a show on this earlier about how I believe that all families should seek a church and find a good community church to be in. It's just what you should do in order to, you have these. I have wonderful memories of the churches that I attended when I was young, and so it builds memories and it builds a family context.
Mm-hmm.
It helps you
through all kinds of times,
exactly.
Good times and hard times. I'm a preacher's kid, I know exactly what you're talking about. And my father was a minister, and I just church is a big part of my life, and I think I see it help a lot of people, and as it has helped me too, and it's always a great place to get to know others.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And I think that some, generations have maybe gotten out of that practice of, getting up early. And their churches start a little later. Churches are, at 11 o'clock. And so it's not really that early. But the spiritual seeds that you plant in your family, especially in your kids at that age, really, really bear fruit as they get older. And I talk to my kids. They're now in their late 20s, early 30s. And those values, those lessons that they learn in that process, it stays with them.
Oh, I think so. Yeah. And you're right. It goes in different stages. Kids don't always want to go to church. And I know I struggled with my own daughters. We didn't always want to go to church in the morning.
Sometimes you got to drag them in.
But every now and then, I think, it's like later in life, they understand why they had to go at certain times, But it just is different for everybody. It's not a linear progression. Sometimes you feel the need to go, and sometimes you don't understand why. It just depends.
And a lot of times, you go into a church and you're thinking about something, or there may be an issue in your life that may lead you to church. But it's really God calling you, and you go to that church and you'll get a message and you will get what you need. You will hear what you need.
The other thing I want to point out is that not everybody believes all the same things. And that we really have a diverse congregation. Some people are Buddhists as well. And some people are believe all the doctrine. And then other people aren't really sure, about certain things in the Bible. And so we all come with our own beliefs. But I think what joins us together is that we all want to learn from each other and help out,
Well, as well as everybody has their own faith journey.
Yeah.
And they're going to go through it and express that, in various ways. But I would like to quote the Bible in the verse that says, "Seek God first and all things will be added unto you." Uh-huh. And that seeking process, it may take many forms, but you will be able to find, I believe, the answers that you need.
And the other thing to remember, too, is that there are so many ways to belong to the church. If you don't want to be there on Sundays, but you're a great musician and you want to play music, come on in. You know what I mean? It's not just a Sunday morning thing. If you are real creative and you want to share your talents, come over. The church is a great place to do all sorts of nice things. And it's not just a Sunday morning venture.
Well, it circles back to the whole community aspect that you talked about. There's a lot of community engagement for a church, an extraordinary amount. And a lot of churches, like you said, are just sort of Sunday churches where maybe a Bible study or something on a Wednesday. You guys are open a lot, you know.
Oh, and, yeah. And I love it. Our basement is being used full time by Promise Neighborhood. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. So, you know, there's a bunch of kids that are there after school, you know, and through the summer. And and people come there for concerts on the lawn. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. And we have an orchestra that sometimes performs inside, and we've had plays, and it's a good place for lectures if people wanted to talk about a certain subject. So, yeah, and sometimes people come in just to practice the piano.
Mm, mm. So. Well, you know, I believe that whatever brings you in, you know, you can help find and redefine your purpose. There's so many good reasons, great reasons, to go to church. And now, how can people get your wonderful book?
Well, I have an email address. There's also, if you want more information, there's a website, firstpreshudson.org.
Okay, say it again.
It's all one word, firstpreshudson.org.
Okay.
And there you get information about, you know, the phone number. I can give you the phone number. Do you want that?
Yes, yeah, I think I'll list this.
It's hard unless you can, I don't know. I'll try. 518-828-4275. And if you don't want to call, you can just write us a note. And it'll get to us. We're on 369 Warren Street in Hudson, New York, 12534.
So you've got your website, and mm-hmm. you've got your a phone number and an address, right?
And a mailing address. Yeah. So they're right in the church, and usually the church is open, most of the week. In fact, I think it's every day.
I know, it's so wonderful.
And so, yeah, I'm hoping that people will reach out to us and we'll give you a copy of the book.
And you can stop in. You can actually, and of course, the fourth way, you could actually just physically go, walk in, and purchase the book.
Yeah, the church administrator is in the office, which is not on Warren Street, but on the other opposite end. So, yeah,
like by the parking lot.
Yeah, right by the parking lot. Yeah.
So very, very nice.
I'm hoping people can get a copy of their own and share it with their children.
So now, in your mind's eye, do you imagine that people are going to, because you get a book and you read to your kids at various stages. Sometimes they are not able to read yet, so you're reading to them. Mm-hmm. Other times they are reading, and then eventually they get to read it themselves.
Right.
Do you imagine sometimes like what the parent is gonna, you know, how the parent is reacting as he's reading this book to his kids?
Well, I'm hoping it'll motivate the parents to come with their kids. And this book is really a book for young children, and they probably will need somebody to read it to them.
Right.
You know, so I try to make sure that there are not too many words and lots of pictures.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Well, it sounds like a wonderful endeavor and a great book, and leading you to a great resource that we have here in our neighborhood. And it's so great that you did that. And before we go, what's next? Do you have a book on your mind for what's your next project?
Well, let's see how this one turns out. You know, there's, who knows, there might even be a sequel.
Ooh,
we'll see what happens to Marty the Mouse.
Maybe part two. Well, wonderful, wonderful.
You know,
wonderful.
It depends on what people say to me. You know, if somebody wants to know more about Marty, well, maybe the story should go on. We'll see.
Very nice. Well, you know, it sounds like the beginning of a whole series of something that people should get in on the ground floor.
he might have some more adventures, but, you know, who knows?
That is wonderful, wonderful. Well, thank you for spending some time on the radio with us on WGXC. I so appreciate it that you were able to come on today and look forward to maybe having you on back. We can talk about how the book is going or your part two, Marty's continuing adventures.
Randall, thank you so much for having me. It's been a joy talking with you. And I'm really happy to have been here. Thank you.
And thank you for joining us as well. It's been my pleasure. Hey, we're going to take a quick tune and we'll be right back on the Tuesday afternoon radio show with your host, Randall Martin. Welcome to the Tuesday edition of the Afternoon Radio Show on WGXC with your host, Randall Martin. And you know, we like to talk about a multitude of issues on our show and try to get you the best and most informative guests. And this week is no exception. We're going to talk about music and specifically gospel music as well as other music here in the region. And I have the esteemed Mr. Ray Watkins here. And you've heard him on the radio here before. He is an extremely gifted singer, songwriter, musician, but especially in the field of gospel. You have a whole history and legacy, Ray, of gospel music, and you actually come from a musical family. And so for those who haven't heard our previous interviews and don't know you, let's give people a little bit of a background on you, Ray. Just give our audience a little bit an idea of who you are and what you do musically.
Not involved, but I started listening to gospel music 9 months before I was born, I guess, in the womb. And my mom and dad were singers. I'm just the last of the four children. And my three siblings, they all sang either gospel or R&B or whatever. So mom and dad, sister and brothers, friends and relatives, they're all hooked up into this music. So that's where I got my start. When I was growing up, you know, my favorite artist at that time was Ray Charles, believe it or not.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
And Ray Charles.
The other flying. Famous Ray.
Ray, I wanted to be like that Ray. And so my mom actually was able to send me to music lessons. And, you know, back then, you know, that was like in the early 50s, mid-50s. And $10 a week was a lot of money. You know, so I went to Madame Rose McCrae's music school in Poughkeepsie. but after a couple of weeks, I figured this ain't working because I wasn't doing anything like Ray Charles, but she was teaching me classical music. You know?
So, well, you got to crawl before you walk.
Yeah, I guess so. But that's where it all started. And after a while, they thought I was good enough to play for at least the Sunday school choir, you know, the children's choir when I was about 10. And so I started playing there when I was about 10 years old. And I just continued to play. I went through high school and, you know, and sang and played with, you know, your regular teenage doo-wop groups. I went in the military room during Vietnam, and I got out of a lot of duties because I sang and played for the ship's band for most of my time there. I actually met my wife while I was there. We got a gig in England where she was going to school. Mm-hmm. So I actually wooed her with my singing back then. And we are celebrating this year 51 years of What It Missed.
Wow. So, wow. So, congratulations.
Singing Sam and Dave songs was seems like it was the key to doing that. So I, but you know, I had a wonderful career. I raised my family, but music just kind of stuck with me, and I was blessed to have met a person like you, to meet you, and got you to help me along the way. So. So here you are, over 60 years later, still trying to sing some kind of tune or play some sort of tune.
Well, it's always my pleasure working with you. I love playing. We play all sorts of music together. We play jazz and gospel and classic. One of the singers that we accompany has a wonderful term. Was it vintage soul? It was
vintage. Yes, yes. That was Bryn with the vintage soul. I think she called it that. Yeah. True vintage soul.
And I think that encapsulates it. But also, like me, you know, you play because you love it. I mean, you worked at IBM professionally for many years, retired from that. And so playing was a thing that you were passionate about, that you did. And, you know, you didn't do it as a living, but you did it because you were good at it and you loved doing it.
Yes, exactly. If I was going to get paid, well, I'm saying I have to do a lot more work than I did. I worked hard at it, at music, because I love music. I wasn't trying to make a living off of it, although there are places that did pay well, and that kind of helps, you know, family to raise. So anything extra is nice to have. You know?
Well, that's how I look at it too. You know, I enjoy playing well, and I enjoy. You know, the challenges of it and the community benefit, and you know, and certainly, I always like to get paid for when I play, because you know I do it at a professional level, but it is not for the money. It is for the fact that I like to play. It's therapeutic for me to play, but also it is especially fulfilling when you're doing it as part of a musical tradition that is meaningful to you, like gospel music.
Yes, sir. Yes, sir.
Now, what drew you? There are many different types of gospel music, and truly, some of our greatest singers come out of the gospel. I think almost all of them, with very few exceptions, have come out of the black gospel experience, at least early on. Why do you think that is?
Well, what made it was tradition for me. Like I said, I came from a musical family. My dad was a gospel singer back in the early 30s and 40s. And they did come up from the South. And he was we started, helped start a group of quartet singers, and they were just kind of like me, you know, they were people that you met, people that you knew that liked to do this type of thing. So they started this gospel group, and like you, they ended up being broadcasters for gospel music. Mm-hmm. And so, you know, that kind of wore off on me. And public entertainment is, it gives you some kind of a nice high, because you know you're reaching a lot of people.
Right,
you
right.
Know? And the people, and your audience is there to hear you. You know, it's not like you're dragging people in to listen to you. So they're really the yardstick as far as how you're doing, because if they don't come to hear you after they've heard you, then you're probably not doing as well as you thought you were.
You know, you're absolutely right, and I didn't think about that. But you now, wherever you move to, you're being echoed. I hear a bird very prominently behind you.
Oh, I'm sorry. Oh, no, here's my birds.
That has joined the conversation. And but you also write about the participation of a when you play in church. It's not just you're playing at people, you're playing all for people. You're playing with people because they lift their voice, they sing with you. You have immediate feedback. You know whether it's going good or not. You know instantly.
Yes.
You can tell by the claps or non-claps. You know, people clapping with you, people giving you a face. I mean, it's you get a sense of how you're doing in real time when you're playing in church. So it's wonderful in when you get a congregation, when you're playing along with the congregation and a song is moving, there is such an exhilarating feeling because everybody is in the spirit and playing and singing, and it becomes just this joyous experience that it's hard to describe, I think, if you're not in music. You know, it is quite a remarkable experience.
Right. Well, I always thought, If you think about it, when you're playing in church, for instance, depending on the type of church you're going to, you're really playing for an audience of one. You're playing for God.
Yes.
And you're not performing.
Yes.
You are playing, hoping that you're going to touch somebody with your music. I like playing at a church. And I like to hear a congregation or choir singing.
Mm-hmm, yes.
It's not entertainment. You know, it's just something else. It's not entertainment. When you're entertainment and you're entertaining, it's a different aspect.
Absolutely.
You're playing to entertain, to get a reaction from your audience. You don't get the right reaction from your audience. You know, they're either just a polite audience or they don't like what you're doing. It's entertainment when it comes to the non-religious type of atmosphere, and it's playing to reach the people, to reach the masses. You know, so that I've actually did a concert one time at Bard College one time.
Mm-hmm.
It's a short story. And there was a young man who was actually, he came to the concert and his head was kind of bad. You know, he had purple hair and he was just sitting there, looked like he had a couple of drinks before he came.
Mm-hmm.
And one of my stronger singers had a lead song that she sang. She came off the stage with her mic and she just sang in front of this young man. And it was almost like she was ministering to this young man. But for some reason, she was able to get him somehow. His whole demeanor, everything changed about him that day at that concert. Fast forward several months later, I get a letter from this young man's mother. The name of our organ, choir was called the Thompson Ensemble. It was in honor of the pastor of the church, Reverend Thompson. Well, the letter was written to Reverend Thompson, but it wasn't, the mother didn't know that Reverend Thompson wasn't at that concert, you know, but she thought I was Reverend Thompson. So she wrote this letter to me, thanking me for changing her son's life through that concert, because after that concert, he was a totally different person. He changed his studies. He went into theology, and I don't know if he's a preacher now or not, but I thought, wow, look at that, you know, just through that young lady's ministering through song, he changed his life, which was cool, you know. I don't think entertainment usually does that. That doesn't usually do that, but, you know, gospel, Christian music sometimes does that. You know, people do change their lives.
Yeah, you're absolutely right. Like, you know, I will go and play at a concert, and people say, oh, we enjoyed that. That was wonderful. And you're just sort of in that moment. It's not really truly transformational. But as you said, I haven't had an experience like that. But I have been and played in a church service where you do see people genuinely engaged in the song at a whole different level, and like you said, it's a you and God experience, and you're playing. I really try to be very much led by the Spirit in playing. It's not like in a concert, I might take a solo, I might do this and all of that, and it is about showcasing my craft and my work musically in a concert, but at church, it's really not. It's like, you know, it's really just following the lead of the Spirit. And sometimes you might be playing something and the preacher might come on and they are ministering. And you might have to stay on the same couple of notes for a while because you're just in that spirit. But something is happening. There's a transformational thing that's happening to people. And I'm not doing it. You know, I'm just keeping the beat or keeping the rhythm, but something is happening because the people they're feeling it, they're reacting, and they're being transformed, renewed. I don't know what's happening in them, but something is happening that's palpable in the church, and I love being part of that. And I feel honored to be in the service. You know, sort of part of God's ensemble that is. Putting this out into the world.
Yes.
So tell me, all right, so again, you've always had your professional avocation, and yet you played on the, you know, in churches all the time, as you still do. You still do play on Sundays in church. What keeps you coming back?
The love of God and the love of my music. and don't get me wrong, I never claimed to be a great musician or a great singer, but I do like having people like you and other people, very talented people, around me, because actually that makes me better. That makes me more comfortable. I can make mistakes, and you guys cover them up pretty good.
we just follow you. Wherever you go, we follow you.
Yeah, but, you know, there's nothing like improv.
Yes.
You know, when I follow a script, you know, I'm playing somebody else's music, you know, so I love improvisational stuff. So because I can change. And if you play with people long enough, they know your changes. And you
right,
know
they'll
changes.
Change with you.
Yeah, so I just enjoy it. Enjoy it because I can do all those things, you know. As a matter of fact, I prefer improv.
Me too.
You know, reading music, and my eyes aren't getting any better, so I'm not that good at reading music anymore anyway. I think when you have people that have the same or similar types of skills and motivation, it's easy. It is so easy. And the first thing you have to get over, what I found out, is your nervousness.
Yes.
You know, are people going to be critical of what you're singing or critical of what you're playing? Those are the things that used to get me early on when I started playing. Because, you know, when you're a beginner, you know, you're surrounded by a lot of people that's been doing it for a long time. The best thing that you can do when you're around people who've been around a long time is learn from them, you know. But it's hard to get away from that nervousness at first. There's very seldom a time today that I'm nervous about getting in front of anybody.
You seem so confident. I have never seen you are so natural. And when you get in front, you own your spot. You start playing and singing, and you own that area. I mean, I've never seen anything like it. I mean, now that you're bringing this to my remembrance, I mean, you just, you would never know. You would never think that you feel self-conscious in any way. You're just such a natural, and people just take to you because you're just in command and in control of the instrument, but the room and the audience. Yeah. And I admire how you do that.
Well, I appreciate that, but I have to be around, like I said, people that are like you, you know, and the rest of the folks that are playing, that are part of it, that are singing, you know, it makes it. It's so much easier. I look at my audience as my friends, whether they like me or not. But that night, they're going to be my friends. You know?
Right.
And I want them to feel comfortable too, because you know, people in those front seats, they get nervous too. They're like, "Boy, I hope he doesn't call me up here to do anything right now." So like, just don't bother me, man. You know, don't ask me to come up here and do something. And I wouldn't do that anyway.
Your
audience have to be comfortable too.
Yes. And then, you know, I think when an audience sees you're into it and you're 100% into it, and you're having a good time.
Yeah.
They almost, it's infectious. I think they can't help but to also have a good time because they are in, like, especially if they're close up, they can see it. They can see the authenticity and they say, "Oh, well, you know, he's 100% into it. He knows what he's doing and he's doing it." And the thing about, like, when you play, people don't know really what you're going to do before you do it. So you and I, and I think every musicians have, you know, occasionally have done things, missed a note, missed a step, dropped a stick. Yeah. And but you carry on and you don't, it's like, not only do you not, you can't even acknowledge the mistake because then you get in your own head.
Right.
So, and I always say, like, if you do something that is a mistake, do it again. now it's a pattern, and people won't notice. But you can't become self-conscious and then give a good show. You can't be second-guessing yourself
absolutely
as you're doing it. You got to give it your all, and they hope for the best.
Exactly. And that is so important, because, you know, and oftentimes somebody's playing to come and see you. So you know you have to give them something. You got to give them something that they paid for. You can't, and it doesn't mean you can't make mistakes, because people do make mistakes and they don't even know that they're mistakes unless you bring it to their attention. when you hit a bad key, nobody notices it, unless you notice it, so you just continue on, and you give people the entertainment that you promised to give them when you go out there.
Well, you always meet or exceed what I think people expect, because I think there's a level of commitment to that audience. Like, we're there and we're committed to giving you a good performance, and we deliver that. But that is different than what we're talking about with gospel music. I want to preface this in the fact that you have been a staple of not only playing gospel, but organizing concerts and being sort of a key figure in gospel concerts in the Hudson Valley for many, many years. And this September 28th is no exception. It's going to be one in a number of sort of annual events that have happened with the Hudson Valley Gospel Choir.
Yes, and I'll tell you, I was really excited about that, because it was something that was needed. I thought something that needed, and tourism came to me several years ago and said, "Hey, how'd you like to do this?" And of course, what am I going to say? No, of course I'd like to do that. It was an opportunity to showcase the talent that's in the Hudson Valley. Singers, musicians, speakers, dancers. There's such a variety of things that you could do with this music, And of course you think, well, let's do something that they'll want to see again. You don't want to do something and say, "Oh, well, that was a mess." You really want to put a big effort into it, because the first time that sort of thing was done in this area, although it's something that's been being done throughout the country. But you really want to go out and give the people something in many ways. Some people come to these things to be entertained, that's fine. Some other people come there to be blessed, whatever. Whatever you're coming there for, we want you to enjoy.
That is going to wrap it up for this 5 o'clock hour of the Tuesday Afternoon Radio Show. Thank you, Ray. It's always, always, always a pleasure speaking with you. Thank you guys for tuning in to the Tuesday Afternoon Radio Show with your host, Randall Martin. Thank you again, Brother Ray.
Thank you too, big guy. I really appreciate you.
You got it. And that just about does it for this edition of the Tuesday Afternoon Radio Show. Thank you for hanging out with us, and we will see you next time on WGXC. This is Randall Martin signing off.
to be.